This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. What's happening? Oh, my God. There are horses in the street. It's like 1300 all over again. What's going on? I know. It's ridiculous.
Hear that? Yeah.
So ridiculous.
What are these cobbles?
Yeah, the cobble streets. You didn't know we had cobbled streets.
No.
Actually, the truth is Leanne is actually a centaur. She's been hiding this from us, I don't know how, through clever angles and smoke and mirrors.
Well, I've been wearing tackies over my hooves.
Oh, why am I thinking of that meme now that Ford sent us?
Which one?
Of President Trump.
Oh, his posture. He looks like
the
he's
horse
a
posture.
Oh, that is funny. I can't unsee it now.
That's some funny shit, that. All right, what's happening, everybody?
Happy Thursday.
Yeah, happy Thursday. Now, you know, we've changed things slightly, as we do from time to time, and now, Pumi's moved to Tuesday, but the Burning Platform stays on a Thursday, and we've brought Leanne Moll in on a Thursday due to popular demand.
Oh, is this a permanent thing? I haven't been informed.
That's what I think, yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then Leanne swears probably that everything changes just because it's a Thursday. She doesn't know where to plug her headphones in. She doesn't know how to sit. She doesn't know how to move her chair. Leanne, same thing.
Stop treating me like I treat Damon.
I'm just glad he's not here, because Leanne, you seem a little calmer this morning.
Sure, it's so much better.
Gugu, you seem a little more manflu-y this morning.
Can you hear how Gugu's sounding like he just came from the Arctic?
I don't know, I sound the same. I feel
better. And you took your bike. Do you know how many grandmothers would say, "You're going to get a cold"?
Yeah, probably.
"You're going to get a cold."
Sleep, Grandma.
How are you feeling?
Don't worry. Oh. He'll be fine.
What?
Nobody's interested in whether you're
Sia's interested.
No.
And Cindy.
Cindy.
Two of us.
Do you hear me?
This is she does. Is this the woman that said she loved you once?
Yeah, she did say she loves me. I haven't heard from her in a
while.
I don't
think she's went that far.
I want you to get a girlfriend, because I think it's probably good for you, and you need someone to look after you.
I do, right?
Yeah, I don't. Even if it's someone who's, even if she's hideous and lonely and desperate.
Now that's a mother.
How?
She'll mother me too much.
That's what I'm... That you need that right now.
Oh, okay.
That's what you need right now. Even if it's for a week. She could be hideous. She could be so fucking ugly that when she walks...
Well, then I won't show you her if she's ugly.
No, you won't show us, but she'll look after you and nurse you back to health, and you can dump her about 3 weeks later.
I don't know what to say about this conversation.
I'm giving him good advice.
Manly advice.
Are you sure it's good?
Of course it's good advice. It comes from me.
Oh.
Speaking of outrageous arrogance... Sia Sangweni has got...
segue already.
He has got a picture of himself. Leanne commented on this when she walked
in. His laptop.
Right. On his phone as his background.
What's wrong with that?
As his screensaver on his phone and as his screensaver on his laptop.
Who does
pictures
that?
Pictures of himself.
I do. Firstly, this is a very cool photo on my phone.
It's like a little...
But it's just you.
Yes.
Everything's you.
I think there's no way actually for me to explain it. Except the, you know, my wallpaper picture just always makes me smile.
Of course.
It's how I spend my 18th birthday.
You are a narcissist.
Do you call yourself, Sia, just to see your phone ringing?
Listen to this. A narcissist has pointed out a narcissist in the room.
I know. That's quite something.
Takes one to know one. No, I don't.
Oh, you were talking about me. No. See, a narcissist doesn't ever know they're a narcissist.
I don't think I'm narcissistic.
Aren't you?
I'm very egotistical, and I'm also vain. But narcissism to me also has this...
You know, Gord was saying
I'll put myself first regardless of anything. Complex.
Gord said he's tired of people whenever they have a bad relationship saying, "Oh my God, he's a psycho," or "she's a psycho," or "she's such a narcissist." Mm. These are actually... terms that are used to clinically diagnose people who have very serious problems. It's like if you say someone's got mental health issues. I don't use that very lightly. You know, I think this week is Depression Week, isn't it?
It was
depressed. I didn't notice. Jeez, it was just like another week for me.
It was suicide prevention week.
Same as next week.
Your condom.
Suicide prevention.
It was suicide prevention day. That's right.
Because I got like a WhatsApp or something from SADAG because we've done a lot of work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I take these things quite seriously, not because I have them, because that's the main, let's face it, the main reason anyone cares about anything is because they've got that problem or they've got
someone
that
they know, they're dealing with it, yeah.
So I don't have anyone in my family with serious mental health issues, but I take it seriously because I think it's a massive problem in South Africa. In the world, but here we have loads of people who are properly broken, you know.
Mm.
They didn't have the right influences when they were growing up. They maybe didn't even have the right nutrition.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just genetic.
They didn't have love. No, of course. Those you can do nothing about except treat them chemically and hopefully give those people a way to express their positive attributes, their talents and their charisma and their characteristics that are useful to society in a useful way. But I mean the ones who are really damaged. Those people, we don't take enough time to think about it because we're also busy going about our lives, you know, and we're driving and we're going to meetings and appointments and we're doing important things in business and we're trying to earn a living and feed our families. And there's too much going on for us to actually stop and go, whoa, hold on a second. That person I've just spoken to is properly clinically depressed.
Mm.
And what do I do about that? And people who say they're going to commit suicide very seldom do. It's usually the ones who, it comes out of the blue and people go, oh, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah, there was no warning. He seemed okay.
Well, the reason there was no warning is because most people are living in their own bubble. They don't actually listen to or look at or pay attention to the people around them.
They don't catch the signs.
No, exactly, because they're so self-absorbed. And, I mean, we joke about narcissism or egotism or, you know, any of those things. We joke about it because it's funny in a normal world.
Yeah.
But for the people who are actually going through this stuff, it's really hard.
No, but also, I mean, so you all know that I go through these things myself, but I use humor to get by. I can't just be depressed about being depressed, you know?
No, otherwise two kinds of depression.
No, it's a double whammy.
Yeah.
Whammer. What?
It's like an Oreo cookie of depression.
Man, I am fascinated by mental wellness and mental health issues.
That's why you'll notice, how I never, when Leanne does talk about something serious, I can't deal with it.
No, he overlooks it completely. I'm used to that now.
Mega church pastor who was known for his work in mental health advocacy kills himself.
Oof. Yeah, that's in the news today.
Which one?
What?
Not a South African.
Hmm.
Jared Wilson.
I've never heard of him.
Southern California, that's why.
Uh-huh.
But he joined the church as an associate partner last year and has spoken out many times about the issue of mental health. And he even, with his wife, founded an outreach called Anthem of Hope, designed to help people dealing with depression and suicidal thoughts.
Mm.
And then he goes and switches himself off.
Yeah.
Shame.
Well, survived by his wife and two sons.
Jeez.
All of this is fascinating to me, simply because I do want to know more. And I've caught myself watching the Avicii documentary. This is a documentary he made himself while he was still alive. It's called Avicii True Stories. It was made in late 2016. And when you watch it now, in retrospect, knowing what ultimately happened, the fact that he ended up committing suicide, it is chilling, but also so eye-opening to watch, to see the glimpses of what was happening to him and the warning signs that his team could have picked up on. Look, we aren't blaming his team, but they could have picked up on. You know, there was a point, it follows Avicii touring and how he makes music and how, you know, he handles his business. And there was a series of concerts that he had in Las Vegas before he went over to Europe to tour some more. And he was in a moment where he said, I can't do this anymore. So Avicii suffered a lot from anxiety. And he says it so many times in the documentary. Like, that stopped me when I heard it. I was like, whoa, that was him literally saying, like, he can't do it. There was a point he even said, if I do these tours, I will end up dying. these will kill me. Because he says, you know, the anxiety of being in large groups of people and just having to go through that experience of handling people's energy and how he has to be on point for these large crowds. He ended up admitting that that's why he drank so much, because he drank before gigs to numb himself a bit for him in order to, you know, perform at these concerts. And you think about it, whether you are interested in being a DJ or not, I think the life that the likes of an Avicii lived is this quintessential perfect life to all of us. He's young, he has so much money, he's successful, he gets to travel, and you think, come on, why wouldn't life anyone so want bad. That?
But right. you don't really take seriously when people say, I can't do this anymore, this is going to kill me. And there's no way of emphasizing it more as a person who feels that way. There's no way of saying, I'm literally going to kill myself.
Yeah.
Because even that people say.
I had a wake-up call when I watched that documentary. And that was because if you say you've broken your foot, we can see it. Mm-hmm. It's swollen. It's bigger. You go to the hospital. You get stitches if something happens. You don't know what's happening in someone's head. But when the likes of Avicii cancels 10 concerts in Las Vegas.
Someone should
I'm
have
thinking
known.
About that money, like, whoa,
dude. But also, you know, a friend of mine, we do these dinners. There are three of us, and we go for a dinner every 3 months that we do this.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of, it's almost like a, they're both married. One of them has a kid. Two of us have our own businesses. The other one works in law. It's an interesting combo because we all do different things and we all have quite different lives and we come from different places. But we download a whole lot of crap with each other. It's almost a bit like very informal therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing. I mean, it's like what friends should do, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And we sit down and we all just talk about what's going on in our lives. It's not planned that way. It's just the way it happens. We don't have an agenda. But we sit there and we talk to each other. And last night, the one guy was saying he's really been working hard the last 3 months, he says, have been excruciating. And he feels like he's very, very stressed at the moment and needs to take a week where he's just not doing anything. So he's going to turn away all the work for that week and he's going to stay at home. And his wife has said to him, you need to take a breather here. And I think it's so healthy that he's got, first of all, a wife who understands that and says to him, it's time you take a break because you know, you're getting a bit frayed at the edges and you need to be at your best for me and for your kid and everything else. But he's also smart enough to identify that and do it. Like, you don't want to burn out. And there's so many pressures on people.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to make this a depressing start to your Thursday.
Well, it's not there yet, Gareth.
But the fact is that it is Suicide Prevention Week and there are all these things going on around us. And if you just maybe pay a little bit of attention to the people and the things that are actually happening, you could make a massive difference, you know. You could change someone's life.
Yeah.
Could save their life. That's no small thing.
Well, as Jared Wilson, the pastor's last tweet says, loving Jesus doesn't always cure suicidal thoughts. Loving Jesus doesn't always cure depression. Loving Jesus doesn't always cure PTSD. Loving Jesus doesn't always cure anxiety. But that doesn't mean Jesus doesn't offer us companionship and comfort. He always does that.
Well,
Leanne,
are you being sarcastic, Leanne Moll? It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I don't know where this is
not
going.
All
right, let's do some.
I'll say in conclusion, I love my pretty pictures of myself.
Well, that's your therapy, you see. Yes. Let's all do some therapy now. Here's Leanne's favorite song that she sings to herself in the morning when she wakes up to start her day. And it really does help, makes you feel better.
Feel those vibes.
Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, just stop and pay attention.
Loving me is easy
because I'm beautiful.
Loving me is all I want. And loving
me,
such a beautiful song.
Just a dream come true.
She's good. Leanne, it's your turn.
Go ahead, Leanne.
La 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 la. La 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 la.
The bullfrog.
La 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 la.
Here's the highlight. Wait, listen. How
I can't reach that note for some reason.
That Minnie Riperton, what an incredible voice.
What's her name?
Minnie Riperton.
Oh.
She was a big star in the 70s, and this was probably her only song that really, you know, did incredibly well in the charts and everything. And
must be.
That note that she hits there, that loving you.
Love the way like Leanne does it, though.
No, Leanne just barks it out. But it makes her feel better, right?
Yes, I love it.
And just change the words to loving me.
Me.
Then it's a, you know, it's your mantra in the morning to wake up. Mm. All right. What did I want to tell you this morning? I wrote down a whole list of things and I left it at home.
Oh, that's disappointing.
I don't know if you're feeling this.
Mm-hmm.
But this also came up in conversation with our dinner last night. There are obviously despondent people about politics and the economy and the state of the world and the environment and all this stuff. And I always try on the show to just put things into context for myself, because otherwise people ask me in my spare time and I hate that. So I'm not an optimist and I'm not a pessimist, right? Bumped into a brilliant economist on Tuesday afternoon. He was at the same event as I was at, and he's been on the show before. He's a really, really smart guy. He's one of the people who I regard as being absolutely correct almost all the time on matters economic, which you know is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And no economist in the world seems to have predicted that.
No, and it's all opinion-based.
Yeah, that big collapse in 2008 and the global financial crisis, none of them seem to see that coming. So I'm always a little suspicious of economists, but this guy's really, really together. And he said to me, the difference between a positive person and a negative person, or a pessimist and an optimist, is that the pessimist pays attention to the information, whereas the optimist doesn't.
That's true.
It is.
In other words, a pessimist might actually just be a realist.
A realist, yeah.
That's it. And this can also make people a little bit miserable, but I always go to a website which I think we should spend a lot more time thinking about. It's run by a guy I know called Marion Tupi from Washington, D.C. They put up facts. So if you're a pessimist or you're cynical, you want facts to prove either that you're right or you're wrong. And if you're an optimist, you probably don't care about the facts.
You live in Wonderland.
Right. Everyone, optimists and pessimists, should go to Human Progress, humanprogress.org. It is an absolutely terrific digest for every day of your life. They've got quizzes, they've got graphs, infographics, news. There is incredible stuff going on that, again, if you look at just today and you look at the problems of this week or last week, because I know you guys were all miserable about the news last week with xenophobic violence, gender violence, and you know, all kinds of stuff going on that nobody likes. But humanprogress.org will give you a long vision. Because if you only look at this week or last week or the week before, like most news outlets do, you're going to get depressed. Because guess what? News, by its very nature, is negative. Humanprogress.org is taking this long view on where humans are at the moment.
I see. I mean, like some of the stories here, one says half of lung cancer patients respond well to new drug.
That's right.
And you could have said that the other way.
And this is brand new. This happened on September the 8th.
Hmm.
There's a new lung cancer drug out, which is creating an enormous case study basis for people to believe that they may have a way to cure lung cancer. That's tremendous.
Yeah.
Which newspaper? Show me a newspaper that's got that on the front page. Show me a newspaper that's reported that we have halved global poverty in the last 10 years. Halved. Which newspaper that you've ever read, which website that you go to regularly or get your RSS feeds from or get updated on Twitter about, which of them has told you about global poverty being halved in the last 10 years?
Forest fires have declined between 2003 and 2019.
Right. Hmm. Where's that on the front page? Why aren't people sharing that on Facebook?
Instead of the Amazon burning.
Pictures of the Amazon burning. You know why? Because we've got this built-in reptile brain at the bottom of our human brain. We discussed this with Claudie Motsweneng yesterday. And that reptile brain, guess what it does? It has two switches, fight or flight. That reptile brain gets activated anytime we feel unsafe, insecure, unhappy, we feel threatened. That reptile brain fires off and it gets us completely worked up about stuff that isn't our problem. What on earth do you think you're going to do about climate change? Zero. There is nothing that you can do about climate change. No matter how many plastic straws you don't use, they're still making them. No matter how many things that are going on in the world that are at a massive scale, like pollution in the oceans or
eating meat,
you're doing such a negligible amount that it barely even makes a blip on a radar when you're looking at it under a microscope.
I don't know. That feels unfair.
No. Here's what you can do. Is you can tidy up your own little space. I said this the other day. You can make sure that there isn't litter in your street. How about, I've got this, we got a street outside the complex I stay in, right? And it's strewn with rubbish. And I'm gonna do something. I've never done this before because I hate these community people, these activists, these neighborly people who like get everybody else to do stuff. I'm going to talk to the other people in our little complex. I'm going to say to them, listen, guys, let's go out next week and just clean up the mess outside the place. Mm. Because our place is nice and clean. We all look after it. We're all conscientious people. We tidy up after ourselves. And there isn't any litter in the street I live in because we're inside a closed off area.
Mm.
But let's go one road out and tidy that road up. And let's see how much better that makes things. And that's what you can do. You know, we pick up all that stuff and we throw it away. That's making a difference. Not, I'm going to stop using plastic straws at Kauai because that'll save the turtles.
No, it's not. How's it going to? Because you
suddenly I've woken Gugu up. I've awoken the monster. Anyway, go to humanprogress.org because there's stories there that will let you figure out just how great it is at the moment. It's
It says here there's a vaccine for chlamydia on the horizon.
Do you see that?
No more suffering.
I mean, isn't that amazing? Camille Paglia, who is one of the world's foremost feminists, has this to say. I insist that capitalism has produced the glorious emancipation of women. Camille Paglia is a rabid feminist. Go and have a look. Also happens to be transgender. Before the easy bake oven, toy stoves were beautiful but deadly. I mean, kids used to have toy stoves that killed them.
Yes, they actually switched on.
New holy grail of cheap energy storage for wind and solar power. Yeah, look at the stuff that Elon Musk's busy with. That guy invented a battery. We'll talk to Canthan about this later. He knows about it. He can tell us the detail. Canthan Pillay will tell you about this project he did with the Australian government. It cost a lot of money. They've pretty much repaid it already in terms of the energy savings that they've made. Cures for cancer could grow on trees, according to this website. White rhino brought back from extinction.
That's a good one.
That story you will never hear in the news. Why? Because they're always telling you that we're killing every species we come into contact with.
How many more have died?
Reptile brain.
I know. It's insane, right?
Stupid.
All right, we've got to get into some news. Do you want to do that?
Good egg.
All right, here's some of the more mainstream news that you need to know about, the stuff that's going on around us that we don't want to hide our head in the sand, pretend this stuff isn't happening. But you don't have to make it all your problem in your life, right? So one of those things is September the 11th anniversary yesterday, and Damon got hold of Dory here at cliffcentral.com and said, I can't believe you didn't talk about 9/11 yesterday. What am I going to say?
Right.
I mean, listen, 9/11 undoubtedly is the political event of my life in terms of the way that it changed the world. I was studying international politics before 9/11, and I was studying it afterwards. And the world had completely changed during that time.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing that news and going, this is the end of an era and the beginning of a new one. And it really has been. But there's no reason for me to make have a memorial every year? Then you know what's going to happen? People are going to say, well, why didn't you have a memorial for that shooting in Colorado?
Yeah.
Why didn't you have a memorial for those people who had a service delivery protest in 2015?
Yeah.
So forgive me, but we don't need to mark this. But the U.S. did. It's the 18th anniversary. It's not even a big one. Obviously, 20 will be a big one. But President Donald Trump pledged to hit the Taliban harder than ever.
Oh.
I don't know if I buy that. He was ready to meet the Taliban at Camp David this
week. I don't believe a word of it.
So I'm sorry, President Trump. That sounds like bullshit. The Taliban are currently negotiating with the US government. Now, these guys are terrorists. They're some of the worst people in the world.
They don't negotiate.
You shouldn't negotiate with them, but Donald Trump is. And then he says, we're going to hit him harder than ever. It's forked tongue stuff. I'm sorry,
He also goes back on his words and his tweets. Like
of course.
He tweeted that he thought when Obama was in power, he said, why is he trying to make amends with the Taliban? It's so stupid. And then he goes and does it.
Yeah, he's a douche. President Cyril Ramaphosa has honored the late rugby hero Chester Williams with a declaration of a special provincial official funeral. Now, you know what's going to happen, right? Everyone's going to say, well, why didn't Mark Batchelor or James Small get one? Which is ridiculous. Chester Williams was actually a really, really nice person. I met him a couple of times, and I can't say I knew the guy well, but he was always charming, smiling, happy, delighted to meet people. He was great with kids. He was a real rugby hero, a sportsman who I think everybody looked up to. And I'm delighted that the special provincial funeral has been organized for him. He was a hero of the 95 World Cup, obviously, first player of color. So that's a fairly significant thing. That puts him in a different category to some of the other people. And they're going to have his funeral at the Newlands Rugby Stadium in Cape Town, 12 o'clock on Saturday, the 14th of September. And in terms of the declaration by the president, it will contain ceremonial elements that will be provided by the South African Police Service. So that's very nice. And regulations require no other flags will be flown and displayed when the national flag is flown at half-mast at that funeral, among other ceremonial things. So Chester Williams, rest in peace. I heard that news and couldn't believe it.
Did anyone...
He wasn't that old, right?
50-something. 49. Oh, my God. Wow. And I had still just heard it was a suspected heart attack. Has it been confirmed yet? Did anyone know anything else?
I haven't heard.
Yeah, so okay, let's go with that news then. Well, shucks.
If it's a heart attack, you see, this can happen. I mean, I lost a friend to a heart condition at 24.
Ooh. 24.
24. Look, he was born with this heart condition. It's like a hole in the heart type thing. Mm. But it still was shocking.
I have an appointment today for an ECG.
Oh, wow, you have a bit of a dicky heart there.
Yes, it's exactly what I typed. It happens.
Do you also want me to come with you?
I've been for these many times before, thank you. Yeah, but also it's genetic. My father died of a heart attack at 50.
Oh, goodness.
So I have to look out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that also the drugs, though?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Oh.
But, you know.
Do our limbs do make a difference?
Rock and roll lifestyle, baby.
He was a real rock and roll.
I was stunned to know his stats, and he was in the top what?
He had a worldwide hit.
That's it.
No, he's a real musician. All right, so in Pretoria, the news is that judges Stephen Majit and Zukisa Chikri have been appointed to the Constitutional Court. You know, we need new Constitutional Court judges every now and then because they cycle them out. And who was it who just resigned a little while ago? Edwin Cameron has gone into retirement. Mm. So President Cyril Ramaphosa announced these two will take up seats at the highest court of the land. The judges will replace former Deputy Chief Justice Dikgang Moseneke and Bess Nkabinde this time. Ramaphosa selected the pair from a shortlist of 5 nominees. The president says he's confident they will add value at the apex court and will serve with distinction. Their term starts on the 1st of October. Oh. And also in the news, trucks have been petrol bombed on the N2 highway near Somerset West, and it's brought traffic there to a standstill. This was obviously in the news yesterday, but it's still an ongoing situation. Residents of the Lwandle township brought the N2 highway to a standstill. Trucks have been petrol bombed. One driver's in hospital with serious injuries. Protesters have previously been warned they will not stop until they get land. Well, then the government has got to go in there and arrest these people and put them in jail. Then the land they have will be the space in the cell that they occupy. Because you cannot, just because you want something, behave like a child and petrol bomb other people's property. You must go to jail, you son of a bitch.
You'll find land in a cell.
That's right. That's where you'll get your land. You'll get your little piece of land. It'll be nicely demarcated. Someone will push something under the door for you to eat every day. You're going to be looked after like a child if you behave like a child. If you pick things up and throw them at things like an ape, then what's going to happen to you is you're going to be put in a zoo. And people will feed you and they'll make sure you have water and a blanket. But basically, you'll be kept behind bars because you're not capable of dealing with the rest of us in society.
Imagine those truck drivers, man.
These guys are doing. These guys are trying to work. They wake up. Do you know how hard truck drivers work? How many long hours they spend behind the wheel? That is not a fun job. And now you have to, like in a video game, except real life, avoid some idiot on the side of the road who's throwing petrol bombs at you. And you know some of these guys have died, right? It's very scary. It's not acceptable that we allow people to think that this is a valid way to protest. You want land? Well, guess what? I would also like a golden throne toilet, and I'd like $15 billion US in my account, and I'd like to have a massage every morning at 9 o'clock. How about that? Now I'm going to go and throw petrol bombs at people until I get what I want.
What do truck drivers have to do with this shit anyway?
Exactly. Fuck. What are the truck drivers doing to you? It's crazy. So there's the news for this morning. Oh, there's one other thing. There are some Saudi women. I love this.
sounds good.
Some Saudi women who have decided they're going to protest in their own way. Her high heels clacking on marble tiles. A defiant Saudi woman turned heads and drew gasps as she strutted through a Riyadh mall without her body shrouding a abaya. Now, for the longest time, I've had arguments with fundamentalist Muslims and people who are not Muslims who say, it's none of your business. You have no respect for people's culture or religion. When I see these women in their abayas or their burqas or their hijabs, it's entirely your business. I have nothing to do with it, and it's not my fight to have. But if a woman is not allowed to make that choice herself, then I'm allowed to comment on what kind of discrimination that is. Just like you're allowed to say, you know, consent is important in sex. Abso-bloody-lutely it is. And consent is also important if you're a woman and you don't want to wear a headscarf, an abaya, a hijab, or a burqa. You should be able to do whatever the hell you want. This is 2019. Any country that tells any woman what she should and should not wear, you want to walk around in a bikini, that's your business. You want to walk around in a burqa, that's your business. I have no jurisdiction there. I have no right as a man or as the government of Saudi Arabia or anything else to tell you what to wear. Whenever I see a woman in an abaya or a hijab, I either assume one of two things. It's entirely her choice and she does this because she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the way she lives her life. Or she's being forced to do it by somebody.
Yeah.
And the chances of the latter being true are a lot more regular than the chances of the former. A lot of people go, oh, but, you know, this is the culture they've grown up in and these people. Well, who are you to say that? Unless you are the woman wearing the hijab, I don't want to hear from you. What business is it of... Who asked you your opinion? It's like, who asked me my opinion? And often, if you're a little girl and you grow up in this environment, of course you think that's what you've got to do. But there might be some part of you that just wants to break the hell out of that thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And I wonder how many times kids in those situations say, Mommy, why do I have to wear this?
So these women, I love this. They have decided they are going to get rid of their hijabs, their abayas. Last year, the de facto ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed, hinted during an interview with CBS that the dress code may be relaxed, saying that the robe was not mandatory in Islam. And it isn't, by the way. You don't study the
by
Quran.
By the Quran? Right?
Yes.
What does the Quran say? Do you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the Quran.
Well, so. I mean, in terms of
chapter one,
what there are, you must there cover are all kinds and why of, you must cover
there
it.
There are all kinds of admonishments with regard to modesty.
And it's all got to do with, and this is my opinion, the fact that men can't control themselves when they see often women's flesh.
Often. So why should women be responsible?
So because of that, women have to cover up.
Anyway, some women have mounted a social media protest already against the restrictions, posting pictures of themselves wearing the figure-concealing garment inside out. Despite the risk of provoking arch conservatives, many others now leave their cloaks open in the front or wear them in bright colors. Mm. Fantastic.
Great.
And this woman stopped wearing the robe. In a stunning sight, the 33-year-old human resources specialist strolled through a mall in central Riyadh last week wearing nothing but a burnt orange top over baggy trousers. Good for you, ma'am. One day, people will say you're a hero.
Mm.
This is like when Mahatma Gandhi started his silent protests and his pacifist protests. This is going to be a breakthrough for women.
It's like watching history in real time.
Yeah, you know that this is an important moment.
Mm.
Yeah.
It is. This is a big news story, and there's something about human progress too. Great.
Well, you know, just if it is what you want, go for it and do it. Because I once watched a documentary about Hasidic Jewish people who live in New York City, and how there are these families living in modern society, and they work and they live amongst most of us, but they still live by these staunch,
strict rules.
Yikes.
Yeah, the guys have got their hats on their heads. They've got the payers, they wear the little tzitzit. It's a whole thing. You're going to New York, you'll see them. I'll take you to 47th Street. Oh. See us going to New York next month.
Start spreading the news.
I'm going to take you to 47th Street, and I'm going to show you where all of them live.
What are you going with them?
Of course I am. I've got things to do there too.
We're leaving next month.
Thanks for the memo, guys.
We'll go to Michaelisburg for the weekend.
This decision was only made
up,
yesterday. Calm yourselves down.
New York.
Yeah, shut up.
All right.
You're back. I'm joking.
We got a couple of messages, and then we're going to tell you about gold. Now, we try to keep this show really interesting, and we try to let you know about what your money could do, where you could make some money, where you could save some money, where your investments are safer, where they could be taking a little bit more of a risk, but you might make a massive return. And one of the things we haven't really covered sufficiently, and I've always felt bad about this, because Anthea Gardner thinks people who put their money into gold are pirates. But I've always maintained that there is a safe haven in gold. It is what people go to in uncertain economic times. And there is no doubt that there are lots of people in South Africa who look at the economy and go, well, the one thing that's always going to have value is gold. You don't agree?
I've just auctioned my jewelry off for a quarter of the price, because that's all you can do.
No, but that's jewelry that you've had to...
But if you melted it, it would be the same thing.
But you can't. This is the point. When it's gold as in an investment, it's very different to that. And we'll talk to these guys about it.
I'd like to know.
I'm bringing some guys in who are going to help us figure this out, because it is controversial. And Bastiat and Dane Fulyun are going to pop in, and they're going to tell us about Troy Gold, which is a business they've just started. I actually saw posters of theirs up in Pretoria, and it got me thinking. So we're going to talk to them just now. That's coming. Let's get to your messages. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of mixing of religion and culture, says Ali. I can say that, by the way. I'm a Muslim. Well, Ali, anyone can say it. You don't have to be a Muslim to say that. But yes, I completely agree with you. And people like to say religion is sacred. You can't criticize religion. And then some other people say culture is sacred. You can't criticize culture. Both should be open for criticism. There are certain practices that are just not working in 2019. Like polygamy, or like women being owned by their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are things that are just not on anymore, that were perfectly culturally acceptable.
Women staying at home and not working.
Sure. These days, you it's all changed. I noticed yesterday most of the people sharing remembrance stories of 9/11 on Facebook were Jewish. Why do you think that is, Carl? Well, New York has a very, very big Jewish population. That could be part of it, Carl. I think it's also that the Jewish people, thanks to their own history, have an appreciation for the seminal moments in time that have changed culture and civilization. And perhaps that's just something epigenetic. Maybe it's something that's written into their DNA. But I also find that because Jewish religion tends to be very thoughtful and reflective as opposed to judgmental, there are a lot of people in America who've moved to America because it's a place that's tolerant of religion. It's a place that's open. It's a society where you are allowed to succeed on your merits and follow the American dream. And many Jewish people have done that because they were cast out of places like Europe. And they were cast out in the most horrible way possible. And Jewish people have had a history. You know, it's the year 5,700 something in the Jewish calendar. That's a lot more of a history than, you know, the 25 years South Africa's been in existence. So they tend to take the long view. It might be, I'm purely speculating here, but I think that might be some part of it. And of course, many Jewish people were killed in those attacks on the World Trade Center. So I think that's partly it too. And remember, the kind of threats that New York is under all the time, or rather that New York was under for that, are the kind of threats that Israel's under all the time. People drink out of Kauai's plastic cups with paper straws. It's embarrassing. Yeah, exactly. It's just pure, it's pure hypocrisy. It's ridiculous. Leighton says, I'm sick of religion and culture that doesn't look to evolve. It needs to be helpful and supportive, not oppressive. Couldn't agree more. And then some people commenting on Hladi Motsweneng from yesterday. It's just amazing how all those universities who he said he's lectured at have all of them come out within seconds of him saying that, saying, no, we have nothing to do with this guy. He is not a lecturer at any of our universities. Please don't ever get the wrong idea about that. All right, got a great email here from somebody. This is from Donna. She says, I saw your headlines about low productivity, etc. I must just mention I spent 3 years with a partner who was terminal, but I guess I was more his caregiver than anything else. That's besides the point. He died a month ago, so I'm still in mourning, although things are looking a little better as time does heal. My point is that he was fully self-employed, so what I'm about to say does not affect a boss per se. It is just that I witnessed a man deteriorate from complete productivity to being completely frail. It's opened my eyes and given me more compassion. I ended up having to do a lot of his work, even though I was not being paid. But that's besides the point. The point is that illness can quite literally debilitate someone who was once young and healthy and strong. So never take your health or anyone else's health for granted. It can slip away really quickly. In our case, he was self-employed, but I can imagine how frustrating it would be for any boss, also for an employee who is genuinely ill, as both need to make a living. Mm-hmm. Illness and pain can totally debilitate someone. That is out of your control. Even if it's frustrating to someone who has to pay that salary and you're not there, I just felt the need to shed light on the flip side. Peace, blessings, and love. Donna. Yeah, Donna, I mean, I'm sorry for what you've gone through, but wow. What a thing to do.
It's so true, though. That's hard. I mean, I have experience with a friend of mine who lost her husband, and that sounds like she's describing her situation. I also look at the situation with my mom, where she was such a person with so many responsibilities that had to be taken over by other people. So, yeah, hectic.
All right. We're going to turn our attention to much more important things in a moment. We'll talk to the guys from Troy Gold, find out what their business is all about and whether or not it's a good idea to invest in gold. And we'll take your thoughts on that too. If you want to get hold of us this morning, 0797482090. All right, we get into some news, shall we?
Yeah. Just before the burning platform.
Yeah. All right. Well, the burning platform starts at 7, so let's get some other stuff in the meantime. Apparently, there was a driver caught sleeping behind the wheel of a Tesla.
Of a Tesla. I saw that.
Was the Tesla moving?
Moving on the highway.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is a pretty scary story. So this guy was caught. Listen to this. He was caught. Yeah. This all happened. It's fast asleep, and the Tesla, it's one of those self-driving Teslas, is just motoring along. I think this is going to happen more and more. This person is just fast asleep, 60 miles an hour. That's not slow.
So there's obviously someone next to them driving, who's filming
them.
No. It's another driver in another car filming.
But the driver isn't filming the passenger in the driver's car. Some guy fell asleep at the wheel on the Massachusetts Pike, which is a great place for it. And you see the person there slumped.
Scary, eh?
Is this all too comforting?
Yeah. Another Tesla driver was caught sleeping behind the wheel in March 2019. So this is the second one they've seen. Another in August of 2019. The third. And this person is fast asleep having a nap. According to Tesla's website, autopilot is not a self-driving system. You still need to be awake.
Right, in case anything happens.
It could be like a pilot of a plane falling asleep. Just, you can't do it.
No, it's a very bad idea.
Jeepers.
It's crazy.
All right, Leanne, what's going on?
Well, you directed me to the website humanprogress.org, and I found a really cool article there on peculiar cancer treatments from the 19th century.
Oh, yeah? Tell me more.
Obviously, the way these things were written were really fancy and just so fascinating to read.
I love the language.
Yeah, the language is amazing. So you need to remember that the treatment for cancer had to consist only of either diet, bloodletting, yeah, which we'll go through, and laxatives. Hmm. All of which we know are not going to help. The only thing diet can do is probably prevent it.
In those days, they thought it's all about what you put in, what you get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you take out the bad blood and put in good, which is not going to help in cancer treatments.
Well, they didn't even know what it was.
So in some cases, surgery was used to treat cancer, but general anesthetic wasn't made available until the 1840s. So, I mean, they are painted portraits of situations where people are having full-on surgery in a room, a carpeted room with tea on the table and the curtains and everything, just surrounded by these cloths full of blood, and they're completely awake. There's one picture here of a man who's got his arm up and they're removing a lump from his chest, and no anesthetic. There weren't even antiseptics available then.
Oh. So doctors were like butchers.
Yeah.
They just sliced.
That's exactly right.
But some of the things that they ate, the one was called dock root, yellow dock. It is a herb traditionally used as a medicine by Native Americans, recommended by herbalists as a general health tonic, and also a laxative. But in the early 1800s, dock root was one of the many plant-based concoctions claimed to be successful in treating cancer. The instructions here: take the narrow-leafed dock root and boil it in water till it be quite soft. Then bathe the part affected in the decoction as hot as can be borne, 3 or 4 times a day. The root must then be mashed and applied as a poultice.
A poultice?
Yes.
That's amazing. Oh, how cool.
Turkish figs were something that was recommended as a cancer treatment. Both, one assumes, because of their laxative effect and because a fig poultice was thought to have healing properties. That was something that was mentioned in the Bible, Isaiah 38, verse 21.
Oh, look at you, Leanne.
Look at that. She's
quoting the Bible this morning, Leanne. Yeah. Look at you.
Dough and hog's lard.
Oh, that sounds revolting. What is dough and hog's lard?
It's a piece of dough about the size of a small deer, hen's egg.
A female deer, yeah.
And a lump of hog's lard, the older the better, of the same dimensions. These substances thoroughly mixed so as to form a kind of salve must be spread on a piece of white leather and applied to the diseased part. Lead and brimstone was used.
Brimstone?
Yes.
That's sulfur, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And lead is very poisonous, not a good idea.
It was injected into the tumors.
These people were probably making things a lot worse.
They would melt the lead.
Oh, my God.
While boiling over the fire, stir in the brimstone until it becomes a fine flour. The lead disappears, and then scarify the top of the cancer.
That means you have to scratch it open.
Like roughen it.
Oh, my God.
Mm. Oh, goodness.
These poor people. I'm sure it made things worse, not better.
Probably did.
Absolutely. Especially with no antiseptics.
Yeah.
The red hot iron that came from Napoleon's famous battlefield surgeon.
Yeah.
Also applied the skill of treatment to cancer. So it just put a red hot iron on the area. Mesmerism, also known as animal magnetism.
Mesmerism.
That's rebalancing the body an invisible force or a fluid that's said to permeate the universe. Electricity was used.
Mm. They used it to shock people, right?
Just shock the cancer out.
Yeah. The New York paper gives an account of the removal of a large erectile tumor the neck of General Kilpatrick by means of electricity.
My God.
So the general having been placed completely...
shocked this poor guy to near death. It's like attaching a dude to a power transformer. That's just horrible.
The general having been placed completely under the influence of ether, 4 large darning needles were used to insert into the tumor, and the full force of powerful electric battery was applied.
That poor man, he must have been jumping up and down in the seat. All right, listen, we've got a lot to cover this morning, and I want to get to this. These guys have come in specially this morning, and I saw a poster up in Pretoria the other day about Troy Gold. And I thought it was worth finding out what they're doing. They're a fintech company aimed to democratize gold ownership. Do you own any gold?
Fortunately, not yet, Gareth.
See, you can in South Africa, you can buy Kruger Rands, and that's all I know.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is you have to buy a Kruger Rand. You can't buy a part of it. And a lot of people are saying, when things are uncertain in the markets, and the stock market has not been great the last few weeks, months, years, people are saying that, you know, cryptocurrency is all good and well, but they're also quite volatile. And we've spoken to Sean Sanders from Revix about that. So I thought, let's talk about gold, for, you know, as an investment, whether or not it's a good investment. And I thought we'd get the guys in here, find out what it's all about. So I've got Dane and I've got Bastiat in here. And they're here to tell us about Troy Gold. Guys, very nice to see you. And you are your brothers?
Yes, sure.
You are brothers?
Pretoria.
Indeed.
Okay, this is very good.
Troy Knights.
So the two of you started this company called Troy Gold. We're going to find out a little bit about where you come from and what you did before this. But what was the idea?
I think the idea is, as you said, to democratize gold. So we just want to make it affordable and easy for anyone to be able to really save in gold. And on our platform, you can also send gold. You can use it as an effective money. And you can also use it as collateral, your gold on the platform, to access credit in gold. So,
but people have been investing in gold since the dawn of time, right? It's probably the oldest form of value that we have. Yeah. Right. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think gold has always been used as a store of value and a unit of account. But to understand this, you really have to look at the science behind gold. So to give you a quick rundown, there are about 92 naturally occurring elements in this world. And all of those elements react with oxygen, the most abundant of those elements, to be tarnished or decayed.
Right.
But gold does not react with that. So gold is effectively immortal. What's more is gold is efficient across time, which means...
You can find coins that were minted in ancient Rome that are still as gold as they've ever been. They're shiny.
Right, yeah.
There's no oxidation because gold doesn't react even with acids.
Exactly. So that's a very important...
It's the immortal commodity.
Yeah, it's the immortal commodity. So because it's efficient across time, you only have to also extract it once for you to then use it without any additional costs. So that is important in the economy when we trade and we produce goods and services. We can't do that and produce for the future if there isn't a commodity that holds its value and doesn't decay with time. And that's where gold comes in, and that's why it is a store of value and has always been used.
Well, it would seem to me that anyone who argues with you guys really has the hardest job to do, because governments are the biggest investors in gold of all. They keep a huge store. Banks, governments keep these enormous stockpiles of gold. The US government especially, they've got a reserve in New York City and in Fort Knox that is unbelievable. They've got a handle on, I don't know, it's one quarter of all the gold that's ever been mined. Something like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, especially now, I think the last few years, what we've seen is a big push to accumulate a lot of gold from central banks and governments.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite nascent, actually. So you have Russia and China. I mean, they're buying gold at a clip. I think China's doing about 10 tons a month at the moment. So they're really fortifying themselves against sort of, I guess, the whole dollar and the monetary system. But what's interesting is central bank buying is making about 15% of annual demand for gold. But retail investors still, so if you look at the bars and coins investment market, that's still 25%. It's over, you know, it's about 1,100 tons or 1,000 tons a year of gold that private citizens in the world are buying.
All right, I want to talk about how we can actually invest in gold in a moment, but talk me through this. Can people buy a gold bar? Can you actually do that in the world?
So you can. Just a quick rundown. So obviously, bullion is sort of the gold standard. So bullion meaning that the value of this piece of the coin or the bar is related to the gold content, the precious metal content. So you want to buy bullion, and you've got Kruger Rands is the best bullion coin. It was one of the best assay technologies invented, and it still makes up 2/3 of the world's sort of bullion coin market.
Really?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's got massive credibility and massive liquidity anywhere in the world. But you were used to seeing sort of in bank movies, bank heist movies, etc. You're used to seeing bullion bars. And that's sort of still the standard, especially 1 kilogram bars in the world. But in South Africa, and we'll probably go through this around sort of our legislation, like you said, our bullion product is effectively the Kruger Rand. And
so you,
it's a really good
tip. Can't buy a gold bar, but you could buy a Kruger Rand.
You can buy minted bars here, but the quintessential sort of low premium gold investment is a cast bullion bar.
Okay.
And that's the one we know of.
And minted bars here, just to add to that, it does have VAT in South Africa where Krugerrands don't, so it makes it a better investment vehicle.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not saying people should put all of their money into this. You're saying that you should diversify. You should have a little bit of your savings or your investment in gold, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty much portfolio theory. So gold has historically been used as an insurance policy against, you know, our paper financial system, as it were. So
the safe haven asset.
A safe haven asset. Yeah. So you won't, you know, live life without insurance out there, you know, insurance without on your car. So it just makes sense to have insurance in your investment portfolio as well.
And just what we've tried to do is obviously throughout time, and you'll see our slogans, real gold in your pocket, but it was pretty commonplace for everybody to have, to earn gold, to transact with gold. So,
but you're not saying you're going to give me a handful of gold coins like it's the year 400 AD, yeah, and I'm going to walk around with those in a little bag, a little velvet bag, and hand them out to people who I need to transact with. You're saying you guys will keep this in a central vault. You can own a part of it, and you can then use it through any other means that we use now, digital means, to transact if you want to. Buy, sell, add more, subtract, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had to combine technology with gold. So we're taking a really old asset and we're putting tech together to make it more efficient. So usually when you're investing in physical gold, the buying process, taking possession of it and storing, that's your three main pain points.
And those things also have cost implications, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's usually a bit costly and you usually have to go fetch your gold and then maybe store it under your mattress or something. And you've got the security risk. So
Leanne had that problem. Got a lot of gold.
Yeah. Just sold my jewelry for a quarter of what its insurance value was.
Wow. So the market is kind of opaque when it gets to physical gold. Absolutely.
When it gets to physical gold, it's not worth investing in jewelry.
Yeah. And that's sort of where we're coming in. We're saying, listen, we administer our lives with smartphones and apps. We've built this app and we make the buying process simple, instant. We store your gold, it's fully insured, and we've got fractional ownership technology, so you can buy 1 rand's worth, 10 rand's worth if you wanted to.
So you don't have to be a multi-millionaire here, because what is the cost of a Krugerrand at the moment? Do you guys know offhand?
Yeah, it's about 24,000 rand per Krugerrand.
So. I don't know anyone who's got just 24 grand lying around that they need to put into a gold coin. Gugu, no?
No, not me.
Not today.
Right. So in other words, you're saying to me, if I've got 100 bucks and I just want to put 100 bucks or 1,000 or 10,000 or whatever it might be, I will own a fraction of the gold that you guys have in storage.
Yeah, and it's important to note that you're actually, when you do that, you're actually owning the physical Krugerrand. And mm-hmm. our technology fractionalizes that specific Krugerrand and assigns you co-ownership to that Krugerrand. So it's not paper gold. It's not you're owning vague gold in a vault somewhere. You actually have a serial number to the exact Krugerrand that you own, and you get that ownership register at the end of the month. So if you want your coin, you just go onto the app and you tell us, you know, you want to redeem that coin and we give it to you, or you sell that fraction part back to us.
So is this gold stored in like a secret location?
Yes, we have a custodian vaulting partner, Brinks Global. They're actually NASDAQ listed, so they have vaulting locations worldwide. So all of the Krugerrands are stored with Brinks.
Have you guys been to the vault to check it out?
We've been to the vault here, and we've also been to the vault in Singapore. That's quite impressive. It's like out of a spy novel. The security is insane. So,
so how much value in gold have you seen at once with your eyes in one pile?
In the Singaporean vault, there are bars worth about billions in one room. Billions dollars worth of gold in one room. So.
How did you guys start? What did you both do before this?
We were from Pretoria. We went to the States to study finance and Wall Street, and I think we were there around the time of the global financial crisis. So we saw the destruction of the paper financial system, and we wanted to actually provide the world something more secure. So we came back to South Africa, our home. You know, gold was mined here. So
yeah, we were a gold powerhouse.
So yeah, we were a gold powerhouse. Yeah. So we wanted to start something in gold. We started actually mining the stuff. We bought an old gold mine out of liquidation, and we did a whole bunch of gold mining projects. But we actually wanted to give this technology directly to the consumer and bring the power of gold to the consumer. So that's when we started Troy Gold.
This is fantastic. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It makes perfect sense to me. And you know, again, for people who are looking for somewhere safe to put. If gold is the least volatile, or it's one of the least volatile categories in investment, right?
It has a 6,000-year track record as a store of value.
It's amazing.
And if you actually look back at what you could buy, you know, during the Roman times with gold, you could buy very similar items right now. So it really does store value across time. So,
but especially sort of in times of economic uncertainty and volatility, which we're seeing now. I mean, you've got, you know, trade wars, you've got money printing, and effectively sort of gold's the best inflation hedge. So we've got governments or we've got central banks need to print money and create liquidity. You want to be you want to be in gold. So you want to, you know, we think it's a good time to buy gold.
All right. So how does it work? Do we go to your website? Do we get an app? How do we do this?
Yeah, I think you can connect on social media with us, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of that.
It's at Troy Gold SA.
At Troy Gold SA. Our website is troygold.app.
And then if you want to get the app, it's quite simple. Jump onto the App Store or the Play Store. We're on both platforms, and you type in Troy Gold, download it, and you're in. And you can be a gold owner.
All right, and go in and buy yourself a couple of rand. You don't have to go in and become the world's biggest gold investor. You just have to start off somewhere, right? Yeah. Do you guys believe in your own product? Are you big gold investors?
I think that's actually just briefly how we sort of got onto the notion of the business we wanted to start. We mined the metal, and then we wanted to, you know, we got paper rands for our gold, and we wanted to buy some gold, and when we actually looked at buying it ourselves as a retail investor, we thought, wow, we can really improve this user experience and the market. So yeah, we do own gold.
Especially now at this juncture in history globally, we own quite a bit of gold.
That's fantastic. Very good to meet you both, and we'll have you back here in a week's time to talk some more about this, get into some of the practical stuff, and we'll take some questions too. If you've got something you want to know, then send us an email and we will address it to the guys. It's an absolute pleasure to meet you. Troy Gold, go and check them out on the internet and find out about them on social media. What the hell, go and make an investment, small one, big one, it's up to you, and start your journey into understanding how you can get a little bit of an edge on everybody else by having this safe haven investment as a part of your portfolio. It's probably a good idea to diversify and, you know, not do what Leanne did and go and try and sell jewelry on the open market.
Yeah, not a good idea to invest in diamonds
and
gold.
And the nice thing about this too, from my point...
On your finger or around your neck.
Absolutely. The nice thing from my point of view is that this stuff, while you physically own it, you can digitally transact with it. Makes a huge
amount of sense. Completely liquid, just like your rands were.
Very good. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Troy Gold, go and take a look at them and find out more. If you'd like to know more, you can always email me and we'll pass it on to the guys too, Gareth@cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.